Adventures in Research. What did it take for man to learn to fly? How many hopes and dreams and idle thoughts came down through the centuries before man conquered the skies at Kitty Hawk? Flying eggshells, soaring goose feathers, windmills with sails. Those are but a few attempts to learn a lesson from the birds and follow the way of an eagle. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science, produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today telling you of man's first efforts to conquer the sky. Woven into that dream have been many great stories and legends. The winged men of Egypt, Sinbad the sailor and his great flying rock, the Arabs' flying carpet, and Icarus, whose wings came unstuck when he flew too close to the sun. And even in man's earliest literature, the Sanskrit writings of Krishna, 2,000 years B.C.
And it is written that the enemies of Krishna sought the aid of devils, and they built an aerial chariot with sides of iron and clad with wings. And the chariot was driven through the sky till it stood over Dwarka, where his followers dwelt, and there it hurled down upon the city missiles that destroyed everything on which they fell.
Indeed, a strange prophecy of modern warfare, and written 2,000 years before Christ. For always, it seems, the sky has tempted man's imagination. Even in Proverbs, it is written,
"There are three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, four which I know not."
And the first?
"The way of an eagle in the air."
There are ancient myths and legends in all tongues, and all of them flowering into the dream that man had wings and could soar to the sky. But there came one man who did more than write legends. He drew odd designs, made strange notes in his journal. His name, Leonardo da Vinci. He sketched an aerial screw, a propeller. He devised a theory of a helicopter. He drew a design for a parachute. But his notebooks only gathered dust. Not until the 17th century did man begin to harness his dreams to his limited knowledge. Consider one Gaspar Schott.
"You wish the eggshells saved, Master?"
"Yes, yes. All the eggshells you can locate. Borrow from the neighbors. Search them out. But remember, no cracks in them. Nice, beautiful, unbroken eggshell halves."
"Yes, Master, but how many?"
Now, no questions. Do you think I'm going to give my secret away?" "Not yet. The time is not yet ripe. Just see to the eggshells. And who knows, my lackey, when my idea is successful, perhaps I shall let you fly through the air."
"Fly through the air?"
"Yes, through the air, sailing like a bird." "Now, the eggshells should be easy enough, but the dew..."
"Dew, Master?"
"Dew, morning dew from the grass. Your master is a most observant man. I put my mind to it, and now I have the knowledge. Eggshells and dew."
"Master, I do not understand the words."
"I would not expect you to comprehend. It takes a man of an observant nature. But have you ever noticed, my lackey, that an eggshell is extremely light? An empty eggshell is lighter than anything, eh?"
"Yes."
"Of course, any fool can see that. Now, have you ever noticed the dew upon the grass in the morning? Have you ever noticed how it rises to meet the sun? The dew lifts itself from the grass into the sky. Now, I merely note these two isolated facts. But when I put them together..."
"Together?"
"Think of it. Enough eggshells filled with dew could lift a person into the sky.
Then in 1662, the Royal Society of England was founded to pool man's knowledge. It was a pitifully small pool filled with eggshells and other dreams that these men of learning brought to the subject of flying.
Yes, the subject of flying. Why, 'tis possible, I vow. 'Tis more than possible. I would say from my close study of the subject that there are, four ways by which man could hope to fly. Four. With the spirits of angels, with the help of fowl, with wings fastened to the body, and with a flying chariot. So you see, the seemingly impossible is not impossible at all. All that holds us back is, a lack of knowledge.
Slowly, man began to improve that knowledge. If birds could help, he would investigate them and pry from them the secret of flight.
One point I have considered, my friend, is this. How can a 20-pound goose carry itself so easily? I plucked every feather from a wild goose. I weighed the entire mass of feathers. Scarcely a pound. So there you have it. 1 pound of goose feathers can pick up 19 pounds of goose and carry this 19 pounds and its own 1 pound of feathers through the space at a half mile a minute.
Startling deduction. Amazing. And your theory?
My theory is this, and mark you, it applies to all birds. Notice any bird when he suddenly starts to fly. What do you see? A sudden quivering of his feathers, eh? Now, I believe that this quiver produces magnetism.
Eh?
Negative magnetism. Oh, just the opposite of a lodestone, you see. It pushes the bird from the earth. This magnetic force does the lifting, and all the wings do is steer the bird when he gets in the air.
Remarkable. Most remarkable. But can you prove it?
Prove it? I just did. If I am not right, if these feathers do not have magnetic vibrations, why then the bird could fly without feathers. It cannot. So there is your proof. And, my friend, when I find out what this magnetic force is that pushes the bird off the earth, it will be my fortune, mark you.
Another great mind of the 18th century devoted considerable thought to the subject of a flying machine. And he came up with this.
I think one could invent a machine with wings, construct them hollow below in order to increase the force and velocity. Make their resistance to air as great as may be required. They should be in the shape of birds' wings, or perhaps sails on a windmill, or something like that.
So our ancient friend had practically invented the flying machine, or something like that. But at least men were thinking, drawing designs, and studying birds in flight. Others went still further. Others, like the Marquis de Bocqueville in 1742.
What is he up to?
Going to fly.
No.
That is what he says. Has those pedal-shaped wings on his arms and legs. Has that tower built to fling him out into the air. Once he gets in motion, he says he will wave the paddles and fly across the river Seine.
Oh, mon Dieu, what a day this will be.
He is climbing up the tower.
And getting on the catapult, then we'll shoot him out.
He is ready now. There he goes.
Oh, vive la France! Vive la France! What a day! He will fly clear over the river Seine.
Well, perhaps we had better help fish him out.
The dripping, disappointed Marquis proved that man still had a long way to go before he would learn to fly. He lacked the engines and the structural metals and any knowledge of aerodynamics. He was earthbound, but he had visions, and he was beginning to experiment. And then another great lesson dawned. Among the first to realize it was Sir George Cayley.
I tell you, gentlemen, we have to share our knowledge. We can't be like little children who run off and hide with their little bits of sweets. Only by sharing what we know and what we have learned can we make any progress at all.
Oh, that's all very well and good, but how do I know that everyone will? I do not intend to be the only one.
Gentlemen, I can't guarantee anyone's good faith but my own, and of that I assure you. I shall write down everything I know or have discovered on the subject of aeronautics, and all of you will receive a copy. And if you wish, I would like each of you to contribute to it yourself.
George Cayley set down what he had learned of the problem of human flight. One sentence alone showed his keen perception.
It seems obvious to me that the key to the problem is to make a surface support a given weight by the application of power to the resistance of the air.
Cayley fitted the do's and don'ts into sensible order. 55 years before it appeared, he saw the need for an internal combustion engine, or what he termed an explosion machine, to drive an aircraft. George Cayley also theorized on initial velocity, wing loading, bending movements, and the necessity of combining lightness and strength in construction. He saw the need for streamlining, for a cambered wing instead of a flat surface. And he even went so far as to construct a two-wing glider.
There. That should do it. Thank you for the loan of the materials, Parker.
Oh, quite all right, sir. I have plenty of tools in the shed here. Oh, watch yourself, sir. Almost stepped on the pansy bed there. Have you noticed the roses? If I do say so myself, they're doing quite well. And, Sir George, if you don't mind my mentioning it, that would make a lovely trellis for them.
Trellis? Oh, I'm building a glider, Parker. Nothing to do with flowers. They've been putting these diagonal braces between the two wings.
Oh, you actually think it will fly through the air, sir? Like a bird?
Oh, not like a bird, Parker, no. It operates quite differently from a bird in flight.
Yes, sir. No feathers.
Someday, Parker, a man will climb into something like this and fly right up to the clouds.
Yes, sir. May he rest in peace.
Oh, come now, Parker. You can't stand in the way of progress. This is 1809. I say, wouldn't you like to ride in it?
Begging your pardon, sir, if it's all the same to you, I just as soon not, and be here to see 1810.
Neither did George Cayley risk his life by attempting to ride his biplane glider, but he did sail it from the hilltops surrounding his estate. Yes, George Cayley was a pioneer, a man of vision, a man of ideas, who set down for posterity the first faint scientific gropings in man's reach for the skies. A century later, history was to be made at Kitty Hawk. The Wright brothers were to fly a controlled, heavier-than-air-powered craft. They succeeded where all others had failed. But each of these failures, from dew-covered eggshells to goose feathers to Cayley's two-wing glider, helped foster one of mankind's oldest and loftiest ambitions, the way of an eagle in the air, helped write another chapter in an ever-growing adventure in research. And that's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to Armed Forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.